Anyway, so we left off discussing when there are contradictions or conflicts between what Chazal will tell us in Parsukhanas and Pashos and what contemporary doctors say. So how do we handle that situation? So the truth is, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, I didn't emphasize this last time. If you look at the Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch itself seems to be so-sir itself, it contradicts itself in this area. And I'll show you what I mean. If you look at the handout, go to page 10. 9 and 10. On page 9, we had seen is where the Shulchan Aruch will give you examples of these automatic Sakhanas Nefashos cases. And it seemed to say that there are certain things, particularly Se'if Zayin in the Shulchan Aruch, where it says these things, and I'll name them. I'm reading Se'if Zayin on page 9. Mechal in Shabbos al kol macha shenasis machas barzel. Any wound that is caused by iron, metal, the al shchin hava b'pi atavas, this is a rectal abscess, the al simta is another type of abscess, the al mishi yishpo kardachas cham b'yoser, if someone has a really high fever. So all those examples in Se'if Zayin are going to be across the board, accepted by the poskim, is no matter what the doctor or the patient says, those are life-threatening emergencies, and you can do anything. So it seems to hold up, and we're going to see if that's really true, but it seems to hold up, the Shulchan Aruch anyway, that if Chazal said it, end of story, it doesn't matter what contemporary doctors will say.
The first one was, a wound
caused by metal, a metal-inflicted wound.
Can you just repeat the list one more time?
Sure.
Sorry.
So it's a wound inflicted by some type of metal object, iron specifically. A rectal abscess is what they're describing. Shchin haba b'pi hatabas.
What exactly is that?
Well, everyone knows what abscesses. An abscess is wherever there's an infection that is walled off and sealed off from the circulation, let's say, and collects. So a fluid collection.
Kind of like hemorrhoid?
You can have an abscess. Well, not necessarily. Hemorrhoid is not that. Hemorrhoid is an engorgement of the veins in that area. So this would be that there's an infection over there that became like cystic and became a pocket that walled off. And we're most familiar with abscesses that are in our mouths. Everyone, like, you know, if you have a dental abscess, right, so that means that under your tooth, there's a pocket of pus from an infection. Then what makes it special is you can't treat it just with antibiotics because the antibiotics don't go in. It's walled off and sealed. It's one of the ABCs of being a good doctor in any field. You don't think you're going to treat an abscess solely medically with antibiotics. You need to do IND, which we're going to talk about one day, doing that on Shabbos. Incision and drainage. You have to cut it open and let the pus out. Right? It's the only way you can treat them because the pus itself is protecting the bacteria from access of the antibiotics.
Okay.
So this is on this list, whatever reason, I don't know why they picked this particular abscess. I don't know. It'd be interesting to explore it in a historical sociological basis where Chazal came up with these particular examples. But I'm using it to illustrate my point. I don't know if they're going to hold up. We'll see. Don't write them down like these are the things you're going to do in Chazal's law. Because we'll see how the whole thing works out. But according to the Shulchan Aruch, these are absolutes.
What was the one after?
So it was the metal, the rectal abscess, other types of boils and abscesses. That's what a simta is. It's a furuncle would be the English, the medical expression. But even word. So another type of like blister, abscess type situation. And then the fever with chills. Is the final example. Fever with chills. Significant fever with chills. You'll see that Chazal, and all the way to the Achronim, the times of the Achronim, have this idea that there's something worse about fever with chills than fever without chills. We're going to explain the medical reality, you know, how we understand it today. But to them, and they weren't off totally, they had an empirical feeling that was worse than a fever without chills. And the reason is, right, is because generally you'll get chills, and I'll explain why you get chills, if the fever's higher. We're going to talk about fever. We have to really understand fever well medically, and then we're going to see how it works on the end. So, on the one hand, Shulchan Aruch says that. Then if you go to page 10, the next page, there seems to be a contradiction, because on page 10 is very famous examples of where we seem to have dropped Chazal's concerns of Sakana. Right? The famous one, fish and meat. Right? That's the middle one. Says the Shulchan Aruch, "Mein basar l'dagim chobah l'ito mishum dekasha l'davar acher v'chamira sakat l'bisur." So the Shulchan Aruch says at first, what Chazal say, which is you're not allowed meat. You got to really be careful about having meat together with fish. To this day, we have a minhag to be careful. Right? It all comes from the reason. The reason was because they thought it was healthy. It was sakana. If there was a sakana, that's what Chazal said. It's a sakana. Nishana hatava. We don't feel it is a sakana. So the Magen Avraham says we dropped it. It's possible that nowadays we don't, there is no sakana. Kolkach. The chazinan kamadvarim hamuskaram b'demara. We see many, and then he points out, and this is what Rabbi Slifkin, actually, one of his favorite makoros, is this Magen Avraham. Because this Magen Avraham is clearly telling you, you know, at least you have to realize that some of the observations of Chazal definitely have changed. Even the Magen Avraham said so. So he says, like, for example, this fish and meat thing, we don't view as such a sakana. And ruach ra, the idea of this ruach ra, we don't view as a sakana. And all these other things that the Gemara tells you about, doing things in pairs. There's some very superstitious seeming things that Chazal understood to be dangerous that we, in our time, have kind of dropped. We don't think they're dangerous. So sometimes we drop and sometimes we don't. Right? Another one is, after a bris, if you were allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, after a bris, to heat up water to wash the baby, because it's considered a sakana if you didn't wash the baby before and after a bris with hot water. Nowadays, that's not held to be true. And that's pointed out by the Mishnah in the Shulchan Aruch itself. Right? That's the Machaber talking. So clearly, there's sometimes yes and sometimes no.
You mentioned the pairs, the pair of the two.
Zugos, yes.
So that's something you don't do, right?
We're not, we're already shown them the
same.
We're not concerned with
it. I heard someone mention this at some point, that like if you're having like ice cubes or something, you should have like one or three or more. You should never have two. That's probably along with those lines.
Totally. And I've had too many times. I don't want to be a wise guy and test fate right here in front of you guys. But my take on these things is humble.
Are you including fish and meat in this category?
Fish and meat, you know,
the Rosh Kola of our institution, Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Shechter, is not knocking the slightest on the fish and meat.
Wait.
Himself.
So.
Most people are.
Wait, meaning what though?
Most people will have a different fork, and you're not going to use the same fork and stuff like that.
What about
it's admitted that most of the places are like keeps, but I know for a fact.
What about like Worcestershire sauce and like meat? Because that has like.
Yeah, so either you're worried about it or you're not worried about it. Meaning like if you're not worried about it.
I'm saying like it's. So,
you have to go like. If you follow Rav Shechter, I don't know if you do or not, but if you do, then he'll say to you, don't worry about it. Most families have MNO. You know, a lot of families have MNO.
Were you Malashi?
I think so.
Really?
I don't know that for a fact. Right? I know he's not mocking on the silverware and all that.
Of his, you know, GQ and his family. They're not.
But my family is. You know, I don't know why we are, but we are. You know, there. So, why do I mean by. I'm humble about it and saying I don't really understand it. You know. I'm very careful with Chazal. Like, if I knew for a fact that Chazal's determination was based on the third of the Chasam Sofer's possibilities, meaning it was an empirical observation, a scientific observation, had nothing to do with some Sora or some special Torah-related nuance, then, you know, I'm going with Rav Moshe Feinstein, then Nishtana Teva, Nishtana Din, and we can go with what our own assessment is on this issue. So, that's kind of what Rav Yoshev was saying to us, and that's what we ended with. That when what's the explanation for the stira? Sometimes we seem to worry about Chazal's determinations, and sometimes we don't.
So it seems to be that the way we should handle it is my name is, according to, you know, the question Rav Eliyashiv was really asked was this stira. That was what was posed to him. Rav Eliyashiv, what do we do? Do we follow Chazal or not on these things? So he said, look, if it's muskan mikol harofim, if it's like a clearly peer-reviewed, statistically analyzed, randomized, double-blinded study, and everything is clear as day, accepted medical fact, he goes with that. But if it's not, so then he's going to respect that Chazal's thing is at least a suffix sakana, right? Rav Kook went further. Rav Kook said, if Chazal said it, it's a vadai sakana. If the doctors say it's a suffix sakana, you can almost say that Rav Yashin is like saying the opposite to some degree. But I'm sure that it would be fine-tuned. The one issue where we're going to deal with it in detail right now, and it comes up, is fever. What's the deal with fever? According to my list, the Shulchan Aruch and Sif Zayin, we just said fever with chills is an automatic. Fever is an automatic. So this is a question everyone in this room is going to confront multiple times in throughout your careers, and even if not in medicine, with your families. What do you do with fever or chalice? What am I allowed to do? On a weekly basis, I get that shot. There's always somebody who's got fever. What do we do? So that's what we have to talk about. Is everything good or not? Now, my son's called me for the third time in a row. I'm going to answer. Hello? The story with fever, everybody now, take a look at your handout. Let's go to page 12. Page 12 is fever country.
Is that in the west? Or the south?
So we start off with that statement that I was talking about. Here's Steve Zion. Steve Zion says, Shulchan Aruch, straight up. This is one of those places where we're automatic. Sometimes the fashions you can do deraisis for if it's fever with chills.
Sorry, just a question on what we were just talking about.
Sure.
I understand the question of...
Oh, you missed the whole conversation on the last week. Yeah.
So maybe it could be the beginning.
That's okay.
I understand the question of what do you do when, certain medical facts contradict what Chazal say. But the Shulchan Aruch on page 9 doesn't necessarily say that this is, like, eternally true, that these are the things that are always going to be automatically, you know, because that is just state that. It seems like that's just like those are the things that were people have never.
Right. The truth is, right. Exactly. What he's doing is this: we didn't do it inside in depth, but the Gemara back on, I think it's page 8. Is that the Gemara that are 2 pages of the Gemara?
Yeah.
So there the Gemara lists all these things, right? Now when it lists them and discusses them in two different styles, and the Rishonim elaborate on two different groups. One group, which is, let's say, maka shel chalal, maka al gav hayad or regal, which means some kind of internal injury, or some injury on the back of your hand, on the back of your foot. The Rishonim there modify it. They say, obviously, it's got to be one that it isn't just an ache, but it's a real injury of some sort, where there's tangible physical evidence that there's an injury. So they modify that, and they say that's really the only type of thing we're talking about, so that every stomach ache is not a daraisa that you can be over. But then the Gemara gives another list, which is what appears in Sif Zion, where the Gemara just says, these things are sakanas nefashas. Sapida, samirta, which is, samirta is the fever.
Sapida. Sort of like, no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. So, but wait, that's not the end of the story, because then, you know, we don't really know what these things are, that's first of all. You'll see already, as I'm going to point out with fever, I want to focus on fever because that's the one you're going to practically deal with. But it's going to come up again. You'll see the same issue. So, watch what happens with this. So, already the Mishnah Berurah on this Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes this list, including the fever example, fever with chills. And actually, before I get into it, I want you all to understand what fever is. Because Chazal and the different people that speak about it, we're not holding the way that we're all going to be holding right now. Which is fever a good thing or a bad thing?
Good thing.
Good. Why is it good?
It's your body's defense.
It's killing the germs.
Correct. Well, most people don't know that. I'm impressed that you guys know that.
But isn't it?
Most people think fever is a bad thing. Typical parents are going crazy, oh, there's fever. And they think that fever itself, per se, is dangerous. Now, fever is not. Fever is the body's way of fighting infection. That's why we have fever. How's fever generated?
you should realize that everybody has a part of their brain called. Who's doing neurobiology and should be responsible for this? Did you learn the parts of the brain?
Do with cortisol? Cortisol? No.
No.
Yeah,
what is the hypothalamus?
Oh, that's homeostasis.
Right, the hypothalamus. Good. Homeostasis, which means that we have a set point. Everybody has their set point. What their body will try to maintain as a normal temperature. What's the average person?
98.6.
Is everybody doing 98.6? No. Everyone has a little different set point. But whatever your set point is, your body will work to make that stay at that number.
Some people like 101?
No. I don't think so. Usually it could be. You know, how do they when they get 98.6 from? They looked at 5,000 people, 500,000 people. Yeah. They measured healthy people, presumably. And they did a bell curve. And they got a mean. The mean is 98.6. And then there's two standard deviations and one standard deviation. And I don't think anyone's over like 100.5.
I think the main
but thing maybe, you know, you still, even if you go two standard deviations, it's still a little percentage that might be. So there could be some poor unfortunate people. I mean, I've had children that I've treated or tried to discover the fever of unknown origin and ultimately just say, look, there's nothing, the kid's got nothing wrong with him, right? This is after years, you know, let's say, battling this fever, and maybe his set point is just weird, right? But it would have to be consistent, and he'd have to really be perfectly healthy, right? Very exclusionary diagnosis. It's rare that you're going to say something like that. But for the most part, we have the set point. Now, how do we maintain the set point? Let's say you go to a really cold place, and your body says, I want to be 98.6, but you're in a place that's 50 degrees, 40 degrees, 30 degrees, you're in cold water. Right. So how does your body try to maintain the temperature?
Vasoconstriction.
Definitely. Well, no. Vasoconstriction. It's constricting maintains the heat inside. Dilating releases the heat. That's why if you exercise, you get flushed because you want to release all that excess heat. That's how you're going to maintain 98.6 and not go too high. What do you do if you're really cold? What happens to people? They
shiver.
Why are you shivering?
Movement.
That's right. The movements, Brownian movements and gross movements to create heat. That's a way of maintaining your body. Okay, good. So now let's say you have fever. Let's say a fever. Why would you shiver? What would be the reason? Your temperature goes up to 110.
110?
Good.
You're 103. Your D
enzymes. So your temperature is 103. Your body says, what?
Yeah,
what's your body telling you your temperature should be?
98.6?
No, 103. That's how you got there. Get it? Why is your body telling you 103? Because there's an infection. The body's very smart. The body says, there's a foreign invasion of bacteria. We got to fight that invasion. What are we going to do? We're going to raise. We don't want to be at 98.6. They like 98.6. Bacteria won't like it when we start heating them up a little. So the body says, increase your heat. What's one way of doing that? Let me just tell you. Shivering is part of the body's response to generate that high temperature. The other thing is you also feel cold. Right? You feel cold. So that's why you'll be grossly shivering as well. A lot of reasons that you're shivering. You're going to be shivering just to maintain, reach the higher temperature.
Why would you
and you're shivering because you have the sensation of being cold.
Why?
Because your thermostat is set very high. If it's set at 103, your body is 103, the environment is going to feel, the greater the contrast between you and the environment, the colder you're going to feel. All right.
Doesn't
so,
at a certain point, the temperature itself goes to
three? Yes. Good. This is going to be important when we see this whole argument that the contemporary post-game are having over this issue. It has to do with understanding these facts about fever. Fever, like I said, fights infection and is a good thing. So why do we treat it, by the way? Kid has a fever, 103 is an ear infection. Why am I treating his fever? Isn't the fever going to help him?
No, it over-adjusts to, like, too high, so...
So what?
I want to bring it back to normal.
No.
Like, it's...
Kid's in pain, it's too hard.
That's why! It gives you a headache. Fever will cause you now to start dilating your blood vessels, which will give you a headache. Right? Fever makes you miserable. Who likes having a fever? It's a very uncomfortable thing. That's the only reason we treat it. Unless it gets really high. Or unless you have seizures. There are people that have seizures as a response to fever. Right? So the only, but in terms of the infection itself, this is something to emphasize. Fever per se is a good thing. We're only treating it. Like this is a classic ABCs of being a pediatric resident. The mistake everybody always makes. Don't treat the fever so fast.
If the patient's not complaining, then have the fever. Number one, it'll help you in your diagnosis. It'll help you know if you're covering the infection. And number two, it's going to help fight the infection.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you don't let anyone suffer. Don't be too academic. That would be cruel. It's not that good a thing. So if the person's suffering, treat it. And that happens 99% of the time. You're going to treat it just to make the person feel better.
In terms of like shivering, though, if you're at 103 and 75 degrees in the room, you're going to be shivering because you're cold.
Because you feel cold.
Okay, but also when you shiver, you're going to be raising your temperature, aren't you, by creating more heat?
Yeah.
So
I mean, that was part of what got you there. So it's like
part of what got you there, but you know, you're already there. Isn't it dangerous to be shivering when you're?
No, it doesn't raise the heat that much. It doesn't raise the heat that much. Now, if you do. Like Yehuda was saying, if you get to 105, 106, whoa, that the fever itself can be dangerous.
You're dead.
Ask for five. You're in trouble.
No, you won't be dead. I mean, it's not. It's a serious situation. But it often also is, even though the medical literature suggests that this is not true, in my experience, it's totally true. The worst cases I've seen of infections, meningitis, things like that, have had these very, very high temperatures. You could have. I've had kids also just with a virus. And a regular virus, a summer virus, a spring virus, where they have these high temperatures because they do that.
Well, kids also.
Any individual
have
can
higher
do it.
Temperatures, won't they, than adults?
Yes, they tolerate it better and they
heal better.
A fever in an adult is a much more sort of scary situation. But we're going to talk about it, so what do we do?
What about a little baby whose regulation of temperature isn't. Someone who's a few months old.
A little baby we're going to be even more cautious with. Right. But more than that reason, it is true that baby's temperature regulation is not as good as an adult. But that quickly matures. By 2 years of age, they're totally mature. You know, already by 3 months, we trust their temperature regulation. What we don't trust necessarily is our assessment of the degree of illness. That's why you'll find that if a baby presents with a fever, it's an emergency. Right? Any, under a month, it's an absolute emergency. They'll get a full sepsis workup, if anyone knows what that is. That means we check for any type of infection, spinal tap, blood, urine, everything. Admitted to the hospital, IV antibiotics, emergency. So the question is, though, how do we deal with it on Shabbos? What is the halacha? In other words, as soon as, let's say, I'm at home, and my 19-year-old son tells me, he doesn't feel well, he's a sore throat, and he has a fever, 101. So, can I get in the car and drive him and do something? Be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa? 101.
Not just because of the fever.
Well, let's fight it. What's the magic number? Let's say 102. Can I?
I thought you said 109.
No.
How would be 104?
I'm at 102. What do you guys do? Anyone here ever had fever on Shabbos? No? What have you done?
Usually, going to bed, drink.
Would you do anything different on Shabbos than you do on Tuesday?
No, not in the case that I've had.
You gotta go ahead and take something.
I would use the Tuesday roll.
Well, what does it depend on?
And then how bad the fever is.
And why there is a fever. What's going on?
Let's look at the other symptoms.
That's the way I would look at it. Look at the way the post can look at it, and then we're going to make it all. Everyone's going to be happy.
Let's say during the week you would go to the
doctor. Ah, okay, good.
Then maybe you're out of the country.
So why would you go to the
doctor? Just afraid.
Moving to hypochondriacy.
So then, remember what? Keep in mind. I want to remind you of something I told you last week, which is really, really important. Which will, I tell you, will come up in every decision you make. Almost every decision where you're potentially worried about something that's not there yet, or not necessarily there. We had that thing. So what do you do in terms of pikuach nefesh? So I told you there's a machlokes.
Yeah, between
the tzitz Eliezer and Rosh Shlomo Zalman, and I think between the tzitz Eliezer and Rosh Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe and everyone else. I think Tzitz Eliezer's way is a very machber way that we don't follow. And I think we do follow the other way. Just to remind you what it was, because it's going to come up right now. But Tzitz Eliezer said that when it comes to these situations where the sakana is not mamish there right in front of your face, the way you handle it is we suddenly say, that you need a majority. So that if fever is one of these cases, which by the way it's going to be, and I don't know what's going on, but it potentially could be something serious, so the Tzitz Eliezer is going to tell me, well, if the majority of the time a person with this fever gets into trouble, then you can be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa. But if not, no. That is a very dangerous approach. Rosh Shlomo Zalman, I would hypothesize, would say, no. If it's the kind of thing that people normally worry about, like you were saying exactly, then you could treat it like Sakanas Nefeshos. That's all you need. If this is the kind of situation that a person normally worries about, it's possibly Sakanas Nefeshos, then it's not Kevin the Dasha Beirah. It's you don't worry about it. Right? Get that reasoning in your head. If there's one take-home message from this entire little unit, that one approach is going to serve you well. Not doing the Tzitzilei as a way, but doing the Shlomo Zalman.
In terms of like the severity of what you're doing, let's say he's got 102 fever, you don't really know exactly why, whatever. There's a difference, tell me if I'm wrong, there's a difference between driving to the hospital and giving him, you know, medication or something.
Good.
On Shabbos.
Totally.
So, I'm saying, like, you know, if you were to do, I don't know, like, is that, would it be like a lesser, could you be more Mayfield by just giving him, you know,
obviously, it's going to depend on the details, right? In other words, the situation. Sometimes it's appropriate to give Tylenol or just treat the fever that way, and sometimes it's not. Now,
sure.
Who's qualified to make that assessment?
Not me.
Who would you say it is?
A doctor.
So, okay, so you just answered my next question, which is,
where do you
would I that? Approach this whole issue the same if I was talking to the patients and families, and or as opposed to talking to the doctors on how to handle the situation? What's the obvious answer?
No.
Totally different. Totally different. If I'm talking to a bunch of doctors, and let's say potential doctors, that's why I'm going to give you guys both. You're both right now. you're just patients and people who know a little bit more about fever because I just told you, but you don't know enough to really assess situations. One day you will. So I'm going to tell you how to handle it when you will know and how to handle it now. And that's going to answer up the stira between the posts. Watch how heated this argument gets. And I think the whole solution is the point we just made. The whole solution is that they don't realize that Rav Moshe, who everyone's going to attack, is talking to people, patients, families. They were talking to doctors. Watch how this unfolded. It's just an interesting scenario to see, because you're going to hear all sorts of opinions about fevers. I'll tell you right now, there's five cutoffs given. Five different cutoffs given for the magical number of fever.
Oh.
In this piece right over here, Moshe was asked, on page 12, what is the magic number of fever that we should be dovda yisurei davaris? What is the number? So Moshe says, well, exactly what I would have wanted to say if he's holding like Rav Shlomo Zalman. If you look four lines down, Ein sarach shiyeh bara shehu sakana. You don't have to be positive that there is a sakana. The al safek nami mechalim. Because even on a safek sakana, we're going to be mechal Shabbos. V'kol, here's the key words. V'kol shehaadam choshesh lezeh, shema hucham v'yoser mechalim. And it all depends on the person's subjective experience. Whatever a person would be worried about, that's what you call sakana. That's a reiteration of Shlomo Zalman's approach. And then he said, you know what, based on my experience, is the number that most people get concerned with. He throws out a number. He's already made a little bit of a asking for trouble comment. He says 102. Next line he says, that's the number. Most people get nervous at 102. At least until you realize what, in my view, Rav Moshe is really doing, you'll say 102. And then he goes on, he says another sentence. He says, oh, and if the person himself is worried, even 101. So here, all the post-gibs start attacking. So, and he made the third comment. The third comment was that if it's a baby, like you were saying before, any fever. So, a baby, any fever. A chola who's worried, 101. The absolute objective cutoff, so to speak, 102. Now, I threw in the Chazon Ish on the side, because the Chazon Ish...
Does it say well over the 100 for the baby? Or
what?
Just for
any 100. Fever. That's how fever is defined as 100. So, any fever.
Makes sense.
And the Chazon Ish... agrees with the baby part. He also says any fever for a baby. So at least they're easy on the babies, right?
Yeah.
But now, if you turn the page, page 13. So here you have three. Well, we're going to focus on the middle and the bottom. The Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Pinchas Epstein. They both attack Rav Moshe. They go Rav Moshe. But what is he talking about? They almost get sarcastic. And we see the Tzitz Eliezer, the Shitasa. Look what he says. If you can look at it on the right column about seven lines down, he says, he says, any machla acheres ashebi yacholta l'sakeno, aval al pi rov, machla regila zu, lo tavi lo shum tisbochas. What is he saying? He's saying, you know, I am standing to be machal Shabbos for a machla that might cause sometimes the pashas. But most of the time, fever doesn't do that. So here he is again, l'shitasu. He's saying, I need a rov in these theoretical, hypothetical sakanos before I start being dochei d'oraisos. And then he starts quoting Rav Moshe, and he starts saying, this is the line that really gets me. He says, look in the parentheses, if you, the column on the right, if you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines from the bottom. Look what's in parentheses.
Kri.
Right. Kri. He says, read what I'm saying. Could you believe this? Mutar l'chala l'fi daito, according to his opinion, Rav Moshe, kol sheyesh la'adam chom b'midah shel karov l'shloshim u'shmon v'tesha, which is 38, 39 Celsius, which is 102 Fahrenheit. He's saying, can you believe it? He's like just aghast that Rav Moshe would say something like that. And also, the other one, Rav Pinchas Epstein, he's another one from the Eid HaRedus in the Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't understand it. I don't agree.
He says he doesn't agree with the baby, right?
He doesn't agree with the whole thing. He doesn't agree that Rav Moshe, they said they asked, he says, the Tzitzel says, I asked doctors, and they told me, if I'm going to worry about, like what Moshe said in his second statement, any fever a person's worried about, he says, then we should be Mechal Shabbos Neraisa for any time a guy has a sniffle. Because I can give you a scenario where it could potentially lead to a sakana. So they say, drop all that, and they start offering, the others offer other numbers. Right? I'll give you some of the numbers just to see if you have an idea of this. Rabbi Avad Yosef, he says 39, which is 102.2. He also rejects Rav Moshe. He says what some of you guys were alluding to. He says, you know what? Just give the kid a little aspirin. He's talking about aspirin, which nowadays we never do, right? No one treats fever with aspirin. Tylenol or Advil. No aspirin. Aspirin is a dangerous thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Because it's
called something called ricin.
Right?
There was a complication of giving aspirin to somebody who had certain viral illnesses. If you give aspirin, plain old aspirin, which no one uses, there's a reason no one uses aspirin. Right? They used to use aspirin all the time, right? Johnson's baby aspirin.
Bayer.
Remember that? Bayer. But then, why suddenly did they get a push not to use those anymore? Because they were noticing certain kids with, let's say, chickenpox or flu, certain viruses, with aspirin got this horrible complication called Reye syndrome, which is a fulminant hepatitis, and deadly, fatal disease. So don't treat fevers with aspirin. Anyway. Fevers that might represent the virus. So therefore, you don't know if you have this virus or not, don't use aspirin. There are certain conditions where you might use aspirin, but you got to know what you're dealing with, you got to diagnose it. Let's say I'm treating somebody who has pericarditis. Pericarditis is an inflammation of the heart. And the treatment is anti-inflammatory agents. Right? I'll give you a better example. Let's say I'm treating somebody who I'm worried about clotting. Right? Nothing to do with infection, nothing to do with inflammation, but I'm treating them because they're having clotting problems. Deep vein thrombosis is big in the news for some reason lately, that it's a potentially deadly condition. So the way you treat it is with an anti, let's say,
warfarin?
Either Coumadin, warfarin for anticoagulation, or if you're not that serious about it, antiplatelet, low dose aspirin. So, this is a good pro for you guys to know.
Can you spell Reyes?
R-E-Y-E-S, and it's Dr. Reyes. That's what it is. It's the name of the guy that put it all together. So, everyone should know, like, anyone ever see somebody having chest pain and get treated by EMT or by somebody else what they're doing? What's the one thing you could do at home? Everyone should know this. I always make a point of saying this. Memory was triggered. Everybody should know there was a very famous study out of the New England Journal of Medicine, biggest journal in the world, that giving aspirin, at the time someone's having chest pain, will increase survival by 50%, which is an incredible amount. So the first thing you should do, if anyone, Pastor Shalom, near you is potentially having a heart attack, the ambulance hasn't arrived yet, or whatever, give them aspirin. One little dose, one single 325 milligram aspirin. And that could be life-saving. And the first thing the ambulance will do if they know what they're doing when they get there is ask you if you've done it, because if you did it, they're going to do it. So why is that? Because aspirin has an antiplatelet effect. It it stops platelets at the part of your blood that clots, right? It starts to clot. So you use that as an anticlotting agent. So why did I get into this tangent? Oh, yes. So let's say I'm treating somebody because I don't want them clotting their platelets. There's certain conditions I'll do that, right? If they get a fever, I'll stop it because of this issue of rising. It's such a serious complication. Yeah.
Oh.
Anybody. All right, let's get back to Torah.
I'm just not sure where the posting getting these numbers from.
Good. So here's where they're getting it from. That's the question. I'll tell you the rest of the numbers. The Shiva lady said 40, which is about 103. So everyone's got these numbers, 102, 103. Boger Bush has got 101, 102.
Something off tree.
Where are they getting these numbers from? So where would a poster get numbers from in a medical question?
The doctor's doctor.
Go to the doctor, right? Presumably. That's what the Sicilians did. That's what Rodesky did. That's what all those guys did. They talked to the doctor and said, what would you consider a dangerous temperature that's absolute to go up? So they asked the docs. The docs said, well, let's see. You know, they're thinking, huh? Ramosha is thinking like this. He's saying, wait a second. We're going to start giving cutoffs? He doesn't really want to give a cutoff. He's dealing with Lane. He's dealing with the Yishvah. He's dealing with the patient. He's saying, What's the real way to assess a fever? To know if it's Sakanas Nefashos? If you're a doctor? Well, you put it in context. If you're a doctor, you'll realize, as I'm telling you right now, a temperature of 100.5 could be Sakanas Nefashos. Depends on the context. If the person has pneumonia, if the person has meningitis, do you know that there could be such bad meningitis that your temperature control is affected in your brain that you won't mount a fever? Right? Or you'll have a condition like, let's say, Down syndrome patients will not have good temperature control. So all bets are off. Context is everything. Fever doesn't mean anything per se. So Rav Moshe is saying, well, what do I want the people at home doing? So one thing I want them doing is if anyone is scared about this fever, and on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they would be mounting a response that's kind of famous, they should be doing that now too. That's his message. His message is, don't treat this any different because of Shabbos. However you would handle it. So if you know you have a little cold and a little fever, like we all sometimes know. So the way I would treat it on Sunday, that's the way I should treat it on Shabbos. I don't need to give a Shabbos. But one thing I got to be sure of with any fever is that I have a clear understanding of its significance. Which would mean, lamaisa, bottom line, what I would tell everybody to do is if there's a fever on Shabbos, if you're 100% sure that this is just your little old mild fever, and you would treat it a certain way on a Sunday, not call the doctor. So treat it the same way. It's very rare that that's true. Usually you will call the doctor, especially if it's a kid. Do that on Shabbos also. You don't know. How do you know? You let the doctor tell you, right, that, you know what, we'll wait it out, we'll do this, we'll have this approach. But you need that input. You can't assume you know just because these posts are giving me numbers. 103, 104. Where were those numbers coming from? They stopped the doctor. The doctor said to them, you know, what in your opinion is like an absolute potential sakana fever? So there are studies that look at this. In other words, there's studies in emergency rooms that show that a 102.5 in a 6-month-old with a certain white count has a likelihood of bacterial infection in his bloodstream that's a high number, high percentage. So that was the kind of way that doctors must have been thinking when they were giving these numbers, but otherwise these numbers mean nothing. In terms of a case-by-case basis, they really don't have any bearing at all. So, lemaisa, what you got to do is whatever you would normally do with a fever during the week, do it on Shabbos also. So, you're going to ascertain what the significance is, make sure you do it. So, of course, you want to minimize the serum. If you're not dealing with an emergency, so kind of the question is in front of your face, because obviously if you were, you'd be just rushing to the hospital, then what do you need to do? So, let's find out the least amount of serum and intensity of this. So, what in my neighborhood, what they do is they go to their local doctor, walk over all the time. That's what people are doing. They say, you know, my kid has a little fever. I'm not sure what to do. I don't want to necessarily call the doctor yet. So they come to me. Let's say I don't want to help them, right? Or I'm not available. So they should call. Definitely call up. That would be an issur d'rabbanan to call. Should they drive over? No, they don't need to do that yet. If the doctor says, you know what, that fever in this kid, I got to see him, then take a taxi. I got to see him right away, then drive him. You know what I'm saying? Like, you go through hierarchy of these serum. We're going to have to go through what are the worst things to do and the better things to do. So I just told you very quickly. Driving is nisud daraisa. Getting a taxi, amir lenachri, calling on the phone, derabanan derabanan. Going over to the local doctor is nothing, right? You got to put the whole context together. What am I able to do that's safe for the patient? Make that assessment. Get the doctor's input. Once I have the doctor's input, then I'm okay. So he'll tell me what to do. He'll tell me how serious this fever is. But it isn't an assessment a person can make. That, to me, is what Rav Moshe is saying. It's true. They should leave him alone. They're attacking him unnecessarily.
So what about, like, if you, on a Tuesday, had a fever, you would take Tylenol?
Right.
Shabbos also?
Yep. Oh, for sure. Once you're in the category of fever, you are automatically, at minimally, a chola she'en bo sakana. And you definitely take that. Take anything you want. And you can do more. Once you're a chola she'en bo sakana, you can do a miyo nachri like that. You know? Fever is an automatic. We're gonna get the next topic we're going to do is chola she'en bo sakana. Who's in that category? Not everybody, but one for sure is a fever.
That
fever is
definitely category.
No, there's one lower than that called michush ba'alma. They can't take medicine.
Right.
Right, but if you have a fever, you're automatically a real fever.
Okay, easy for us to conceptualize the hierarchy of Yisurim, you know, in a theoretical case when someone's kid might have something. But does anyone discuss whether, you know, certain heters for, you know, parents who sometimes are hysterical or might, you know, I don't know, misunderstand what the doctor says, or like, how often are parents actually going to sit down? Or is it wrong for a parent to just do what comes straight to their mind, even if that may involve?
If they're panicking, you think they have a subconscious case?
Yeah, I'm saying, like, it's obvious if a doctor says you have to immediately come and find it in the car and go. But there are a lot of times when the doctor will say, okay, I need to see him today. And, you know, parents right. don't necessarily
so
know what that means. They don't know the medical.
We're answering your question already. Because what Moshe is saying, right, what he's telling you is this. He says, he's basically saying, if you get the numbers, he's saying, how do you feel about the situation? Now, whatever they felt on Tuesday, they should be on Shabbos, which means, if they wouldn't even bother...
So it's almost somewhat independent of what the doctor says.
Yeah, so I mean, until you know better, right? I'll tell you the truth, most parents get experienced, right? You know, the first kid, the first event, forget, they're like nuts. But after a while, you know, look at how your parents took care of you, right? You could see the evolution. Like I remember our first baby, so we sterilized both. I don't even know any bad habits. First baby, I went by the book, right? Sterilized all the bottles before I could give them anything. If the pacifier fell on the floor, I would sterilize it before letting them get near it again. All these crazy things. By the seventh kid,
wow.
You know, take it out of the mud and give it right back to him.
I know.
You get a whole comfort level that arises. But you guys should start like new parents. Don't start like this.
I get sick of these.
All right. So, any other questions about that?
Yeah, I missed a couple
of
things.
Say it again?
Could you mention the Chazon Ish?
Yeah, Chazon Ish's edition was only, he said when it comes to babies, infants, and he didn't give an age cutoff, but let's assume it's under a year or something like that. He agreed with Rav Moshe, you know, independently, that in that setting he felt any fever should be considered sometimes the fashos, and you have to do something. And where they're getting that from is the fact that the mortality of infants with fever in their time, in the Chazon Ish's time, let's say in the 30s and 40s and 20s, was extremely high. So he viewed it as an absolute sometimes the fashos. And also the ability to assess a baby is very difficult. In other words, like a kid who's older, he's going to give away his degree of illness much more easily and readily. When you're a doctor, you'll see this. They're going to have mental status changes that are obvious. They're going to have a certain listlessness, lethargy that is just clear, serious illness. Whereas a baby, it's so subtle until you're an experienced, let's say, pediatrician, you're never able to tell. So you're going to totally, unfortunately, this happens all the time, parents come in too late. And that's why, like, meningitis, which is a horrible disease, but if you get it early, could be treated. If the parents just think it's like a little old fever, and they're not realizing this kid is, like, non-reactive and irritable beyond comprehension, they miss it and they're coming too late. All right. So the one who really puts all this together, by the way, page 14, is this Tshuva Az Nidri. But now... I wanted to move over to a new topic, that is dealing with psychological illness. Here we go. For all the psych people. This is going to be really, really important. I want to start by giving you two contexts where, practically speaking, this comes up. One is one that's going to definitely come up for you all the time, and that is, what type of interior, what type of flexibility is available for who accompanies the sick person to the hospital? Right? In other words, if a person is in some kind of stuff, obviously you can drive them to the hospital, they can be driven to the hospital, no problem. But does anyone have to go with them? Why do they need someone to go with them? So if someone needs to go with them because you need somebody to handle the logistics of the hospital and things won't be done right, pshita, they can go with them. What if, no, there's someone else to take care of all the logistics, but they just need somebody to make them feel better, to give them yishuv hadas, to give them, like, make them feel at ease. A parent for a child, a son or grandson for a grandparent, something like that. How much flexibility do we have with them going in? So that's one. Is the yeshuva das that will give them, which is clearly not medically necessary, we assume, is it enough to allow for this person to travel alone? And then there's the following story. Listen to this story. It's a real life story. It happened to me. I mean, I was asked about it. It wasn't my patient. There was a woman who had, lo aleinu, a very horrible cancer called hepatocellular carcinoma, which is cancer of the liver. It's a terrible diagnosis. It's got a prognosis, no matter what you do, about 3 months. It's horrible. But there is literature, in terms of the treatments, there was literature out there that said green tea can be beneficial. And what I think the literature really said was, in warding off, let's say minimizing your chances of getting hepatocellular carcinoma. And it was legitimate medical literature. Right? It's one of the few of these alternative medicines that are really not alternative medicine. In other words, like, there was like data that showed that green tea does something good. This woman who had this horrible diagnosis was told about this literature and insisted on Shabbos that somebody boil up some water and make her some green tea. Is that mutter? Now, she didn't have, there was no like available hot water urn. Yeah. It's not that kind of shallow. This is the raisa of Bishul Mamash. Could you do it for this woman? She believes, and by the way, at her stage of her illness, it wasn't going to do a thing. It's clear as day, right? We're not talking about a therapy that's going to do anything good for her. In her mind,
placebo.
It will, right? So, can I be machal shabbos the raisa to that degree and make the green tip? So, what do you guys think?
It's the same shallow as the
amulet. Placebo.
And going along with them.
Huh?
It's sort of the same child that's going along with them, like, because it's psychological.
Maybe. Would that be boring if I just presented something like that? Kind of be a chap here.
I would say, can you, maybe it's, I know it's not really the best comparison, but mm-hmm. if you take a geisus, for example, a geisus.
Good. That would talk good.
And they, you know, you can't necessarily speed up the you know, do procedures, but just say you're allowed to do something like blood pressure if the patient is aware that the reason you're not doing it, so you're making a decision based on on their own conscious feeling.
So good, but let me remove what you're saying now from the discussion. In other words, I think this is what you're saying. If you have somebody who's a ghost, it's so fragile.
So it's like it's showing that that it could speed up that person's death.
Any little
by doing that.
Any dissatisfaction to that person could kill them, right? If they get a little agitated, that's what you're saying? Even a little agitated,
it affects her will. In the green tea case, it's directly affecting her will to survive.
Ah, well, hang on. Ooh, that was very good. Just hold on to that thought. That's a separate thought. I want to separate your... I don't know if you meant to, but you said two excellent thoughts, and I want to address both of them. Thought number one is that if we're talking about a fragile person who's like a ghost, like a person who is on their deathbed, one can argue anything that you do to disturb that person can kill them. So in that case, all bets are off. You can do whatever they want. Whatever they want. Right? Just about whatever they want. If they're that fragile, if the doctors tell you disturbing this person's psyche in any way will lead to their demise, then obviously that's a kind of nevashos. How often does that happen?
No.
Very rare. Very rare. What about the other thing? The other point you made is a different point, and it's actually going to be very, very important. Taking away the will to survive.
Let's say the first case you'd be allowed to do it if it would be second on the punch.
Yeah, if medically speaking, the doctor tells you or you yourself somehow think so.
Yeah.
Then obviously, right? It's second on the punch.
The Gemara said the case of the Gemara where they wanted to do an Issa D'Oraita, they wasn't allowed to because It was like he wanted to be with a woman.
Right.
And they said no.
Sanhedrin.
Yeah.
Right. So hold on.
Even though he would die.
Good. Good. That could be something else. Because Arayos and Yahar Vayam. Right. That's what that was getting at. But hang on. I'll give you another case where it seems the Gemara contradicts this whole thing. That's what the Arayos said. All right. So let's talk about the blind pregnant woman. This is the Gemara right here on page 15. Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Chaf Ches gives the following story. Ready? We're on page 15. And the story goes like this. The Gemara says, not the story, the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, everybody with me, it's very hard to read. It's a parable. I tried to minimize the Gemara size. It cost you the ability to read it, but I'll read it to you and translate it. The Mishnah says, "Ein meyaldin es habehema b'yom." A person cannot help deliver an animal on yom. Right? We're not interested in that. Unless you want to be a veterinarian, but we'll talk about it another time. We are interested in the next statement. Aval mesadin umiyaldin es ha'isha b'shabbos. But you are allowed to assist and actually deliver a woman, a person, a human being, on Shabbos.
Why is that even a question?
Well, is it some kind of question?
Yeah. For sure. Okay. Sometimes it's for both of them.
Didn't you read The Good Earth?
No.
Oh. Don't know about
who read The Good Earth? Pearl S. Buck.
No, but
what were you guys doing in high school?
If it's someone random,
it's a classic, and people still read it today.
We're assuming they're not hired by a agency that's hosting Shabbos.
They don't like handle
their program.
Exactly.
They're
not in the situation to possibly be worse, right?
Say it again?
The mission we say every Friday night during the three of race do that cause. Oh, that could bring more danger on them in
jail. Right. So, yeah, hold on. We'll see in a second where this Gemara's headed. But just to tell you what Pearl S. Buck is,
please,
and what she wrote in The Good Earth, she's describing, it takes place in China, and she's describing the Chinese peasant women who are working in the fields. And they would be made to continue working during their whole pregnancies. She describes that, okay, they would stop working for a minute. Oh, it's time for delivery. They'd go off to the side, deliver their baby, and go back to work.
Wow. Okay, so
that's
what
women were women, right? what's my point? My point is, theoretically, so let her deliver the baby, but you shouldn't be pulling it out.
So, okay, but based on...
get an offer.
Let's say during the week, like I'm pretty sure.
If you think it's some kind of devices, you have to do it.
No, I'm saying, you know, we have midwives in, you know, Torah. Like I'm pretty sure that they're there. So like I think during the week, there would always be a midwife.
Yeah. You know, I'm mentioning why there's a havamim. I'm trying to explain that there is some kind of. You're right. It's pshita.
I'm saying it's pshita.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the issue of having?
Yeah, that's not the part we're interested in.
Okay. What's the
issue? You'll see. There is. Let's just accept. You're right. I think it's a weak habamina that you wouldn't be able to do it. The maskana, of course you can. And the Mishnah says black and white you can. Right? That's the line we just read. But look what else the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says that you can deliver the baby, the karin la chachama bimakom lamakom, and you can go get the midwife. You can go be mechal shabbos, go over the tchom and do whatever you can to get the midwife. Umechalin alea esa shabbos. And then, by the way, you can be mechal shabbos. What's wrong with this? What's the obvious question?
Redundant.
Totally. Of course you can be. You just said you can be. Now you're telling me it in general. So that always begs the question from the Gemara. If you drop down to the underline, do I have it in any way marked off in those? Sort of.
Maybe there's no actual Israel.
Go to the two dots in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Michti tana le'yaldin esa isha b'korin la'chacham le'makom le'makom. Since you already told me that you're allowed to deliver her and you're allowed to get the midwife and do all this legal Shabbos, u'mechalin alezer Shabbos natu yemai. So what are you adding by throwing in that general statement that you're allowed to do on Shabbos? So the more answer is natu yemha to add on the following. I wanted you to be aware of the following chiddush. Here's a chiddush, right? So up to now we have no chiddushim, we have pshitas, right? Of course you can be mechal Shabbos to deliver this woman. So what's the chiddush? This is the chiddush. Im ha'isa tzricha l'ner chaverta madlekes la esaner. If she needs a candle lit for her, you can do it. You're allowed to light the candle. So what's the chiddush? That's a chiddush. Why am I lighting the candle?
Yeah,
presumably I'm lighting the candle because I can't do what I need to do in the dark.
Yeah, but it's also not. Really
so.
Suppressed.
Huh? No, it is. Because whatever allowed me to do the delivery, I got to do it right. Right? And if it's dark, you know, no matter how good you are, did you ever try to deliver a baby in the dark? Not a lot of fun. I don't want to tell you the horrible story that my brother experienced.
I don't want to hear that.
Let's get back to the Gemara. What's happening in the Gemara? The Gemara says that the chiddush of this extra line is to teach me if she needs a light, I can turn on the light. Right? Or in our times, flip on the switch. So the Gemara says, that's cheap. Of course you can do that. If you need a light, you need the light. So he says, no. Sricha besuma, ma'udetema keva delo chazya aser. Kamash v'lan, asubi misva daita. This is the big finish. What's the big finish? I'm not putting on that light because I need it to do anything. We're fine without it. And not only that, the woman who's pregnant is blind. She can't even see. What does she want a light on for? She wants the peace of mind to know that the light is on and everybody can do what they need to do if necessary.
How's she going to know?
The chiddush is, you could do an issur d'oraisa for yisuvei das.
Wow.
How's she going to know if it's on
that? Can't blind people see light?
Depends on the degree of blindness, but there's a large group that will be able to detect darkness from light. They just won't be able to make out anything. But, you know, assuming you get a lie to her, you could do that. That is a suggestion that actually some posting will say, that if you can get away with it, do that. Why be mechal shabbos unnecessarily? If you can give her the yisuvei das without, remember that's always going to be the, every heter we said, you should always be trying to minimize the chilul shabbos, no matter what the heter is, except in a real emergency, and don't even think about it.
Right? Dolei shalom shikha.
Right, and then we'll get to that. We're going to get to that at the end of this topic. So, but let's get back to this Yisuvei. So, according to this Gemara, what am I allowed to do? Yisuvei d'oraisa, for what purpose? Yisuvei das. Just for mental calming. Just to improve mental stability. Oh, by the way, as an aside, I just want you to know that there are other contexts where we psychological illness is given the full green light. Let's say if anybody is assessed as a suicide risk, you can do anything. Anything to protect them from killing themselves. If anyone is going to get into a position where they're heading towards that. So let's say a depressed patient, like if I was a psychiatrist and I was working on Shabbos, and I gave out my number, I would definitely be answering my phone on Shabbos for the fear that it's a patient who's depressed and needs me. It's definitely a mutter to be b'chal Shabbos. Because those are real sakanas nefashos. All the affective disorders like that, for sure.
So like Gemara that we spoke about a couple of classes of years now, clarified them again around the Sam Sofer about where a woman demands that hakdish or show dani. So in that case, shouldn't we possibly not we should?
I'm glad you brought those up. So that those seem to contradict this, right? The Chasam Sofer did say that she can take it herself. We allow her to do it herself. We just can't give it to her, right? But it definitely is less than this.
Yeah.
Good. And here, I'll give you even a bigger contradictory Gemara. Look at the two on the bottom of the page. I'm not going to read them. I'll tell you what they say. These are famous Gemara. One's from the Sefer we learned this year, and one's from the Sefer we learned last year. Isn't that great? So, I'm sure you're familiar with both of these. You're probably all familiar with the topic of Shchiv Merah. What is the Shchiv Merah? Shchiv is Shin Chof Yud Beis.
A bedridden guy.
Right, somebody who's not necessarily a gosis, because that's going to be a category unto itself. Shchiv Merah is a person who is on their last leg. What's the din for my Shchiv Merah? So one din is the special rules by Kinyanim, right? They don't need to make the normal form of Kinyan, they just could say it, right? But another rule is, if they ask for something, right? Like, for example, in this case, they need a kinyan done, right? For whatever reason. Not, they need a kinyan done. Or in another case, they need somebody, let's say, to do something for them. So the Gemara's conclusion is, just to give you the bottom line, you can do it if it only involves an issur d'rabbanan, but you can't do an issur d'oraisa. For their peace of mind, d'rabbanan, not d'oraisa. Isn't that a direct contradiction? I thought for peace of mind in a dying person, I could do Yisrael d'oraisa. And over here, I can only do the rabbanan. What is the difference between the two cases? One case we have.
It's conditional debate.
He's not. So there is a person by the name of Reb Chaim Porush, who wrote an article in the Journal of Kolin, who had thesis exactly what that was then. It all depends on the severity of the illness. And if it's really severe, that's when you can do ISIS, and it's not. But no, not gonna hold on. Let's see why.
Maybe he's not like in danger.
Take a look at the next page. Let's look what the psak is.
It's not necessarily in danger.
Because by the way, how sick is the Shrimara?
Where is it?
It's the same thing, it's a Shrimara, it's not a Shrimara case. What? They're pretty sick. So you get, what's the threshold? You're gonna tell me that a Shrimara is sicker than the pregnant woman? More pasakana than the pregnant woman? Can't be that simple. That was the problem a lot of people had in this article. And also the psak of the Shulchan Aruch is over here. In Halacha Tes, Asur Lomar Le'eino Yehudi, She Yelech Chutz L'Tchum B'Shabbos Achar Kro Be'Hanes Shiyabo. Aval Chole, a sick person, the Takif Le'Alma, what does that expression mean? Takif Le'Alma. It's like a Shulchan Aruch. Takif Le'Alma is an expression that means you're about to enter another world, and this world is about to be lost. But Amar Sheyishlechu Ba'ad Krova, and he says, bring me my relatives. I got to say goodbye. And by the way, this is another common shadow that comes up all the time, unfortunately. What can I do? I get word. This happened just at the beginning of the year. There was an amazing case. This person was in a hospital in the city. Word gets back to the son of the person who's dying in the hospital that he's dying. Oh, we gotta stop, but then we'll continue from this. That he's needed. Now, the son had to be a doctor, and his medical input was needed. So it was mutter for the son to come in to help out the doctors in caring for their father. The shadow that came up was there's a sister that also lived in the neighborhood. She wants to go along. She's not a doctor, just for Yeshu Hadass. Is she allowed to join the son and go in to be with the father? Right? We'll pick up with this. And in many situations, that's what gets us to our other situation, right? Who can accompany the chola just be Shuvah Das? Are we allowed to do that? What kind of Yisurim are we allowed to do? So we'll return to this.
Very complicated.
Yes, but it's going to be very simple. Here. I'm just building it up.
Nice.
Hopefully we'll do a simple approach.
Thank you.
Nice.